Hello and welcome to Psychology in Seattle. I'm your host, Kirk Honda, professor and licensed therapist.
I'm Mandy Kirk's cousin and professor cousin.
I'm Humberto Castañeda. I break up with people for other people.
Your service.
Yeah, they like pay me because sometimes people don't like to break up. They'll like not return phone calls just so that they don't have to break up.
You're like the closer, but the ender.
So people are just like, hey, here's $20. Go break up with this person.
I think that's a Seattle phenomenon, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very passive aggressive.
I think it is, and it's horrible. And I want to put you out of business.
But I do it all gently, like, you know, I'm not mean about
it. At least
it.
Someone's doing it.
Yeah.
Do you do it over text?
No.
Today we have a special guest back on the show, Kate Stewart. She was on a previous episode teaching us how to flirt, right?
Hello.
Yeah. She recently wrote a book called The Open Relationship Handbook. So we thought we'd have her on the show to talk about it. Welcome to the podcast, Kate.
Thank you.
Now, you haven't been seeing other podcasts, have you? I thought we had an exclusive thing here.
Does radio count?
Oh, God.
Oh.
We never discussed these boundaries.
I didn't know you went both ways. All right. So tell us about your book, The Open Relationship Handbook. How did you get inspired to write this book?
Well, I have been working with open relationships, polyamorous people, swingers, anybody in that spectrum for a number of years. And I kept finding that in looking at the books that were already on the market, a lot of them were way too progressive and too liberal and kind of unapproachable for a lot of kind of middle of the road people who are trying open relationships. So I really felt like there was a niche that needed to be filled. There was kind of, there needed to be more diversity in what was available for people.
So this is the open relationship handbook for mainstream people. Is that what you're saying?
I wrote this to be more directed to, people who are in like a monogamous relationship and are kind of looking to open it up. And there's, I mean, I could have written way more on, you know, single people who are trying to start open relationships or kind of more maintenance of open relationships, but it was really kind of written more from the standpoint of people who have been monogamous for a span of time and are trying to open a relationship.
Okay. So before I go on, I just want to remind people that you're a psychotherapist in Seattle.
Yes.
And you're a clinician, so people come to you for counseling.
Yes.
And you're also an Antioch grad.
I'm a very proud Antioch grad.
That's right. So let's start with some definitions. What is polyamory? What's an open relationship?
So these definitions kind of trip people up sometimes. Open relationship, that term serves two purposes. Number one is the umbrella term that describes polyamory, on occasion swinging. It depends on how the individual or couple identifies. And more generic open relationships, which are not about having extra interpersonal relationships outside of the main relationship, but kind of not quite swinging. So there are a category of things that fall under open relationships that are not swinging or polyamory.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
No, I'm completely confused.
I explained that in probably the worst way I could have done that.
Are you saying that open relationship is a more umbrella term that includes both polyamory and swinging?
Yes. Okay. But also there are relationships that don't fall under swinging or polyamory that are just considered open relationships. And then
let me give you my definitions in my, you know, uneducated head and you tell me if it makes any sense.
Sure.
Polyamory to me is when people are open to having other romantic and sexual relationships with other people other than their primary person, right? They don't necessarily have other relationships, but they're open to it. They're living the lifestyle. And they are very communicative. There's lots of talk about what's in the policies of the relationship. You know, you can kiss them, but you can't have sex, or you can have sex, or, you know, I want to meet the person beforehand, or I don't care. But it's more public, and they're more geared towards longer-term relationships. In my mind, polyamorous people are more about having, say, a husband and two other boyfriends, whereas swingers, in my mind, is when you go to a swingers club, and it's random just hookups that you have in the club itself just for that night, and you might not even know their name, and that's swinging.
Mm-hmm. One thing I have to point out is that a lot of these definitions vary widely according to how people want to identify. I've come across a lot of people who just have casual sex but don't want to identify as swingers. But in general, the basics are if you're having what I refer to as recreational sex with a partner, like as you made the example of going to a swinging club, or if you're going to a swinging function, that is swinging. So casual sex, usually done with your partner, is swinging. And there are a number of different settings that can happen. Polyamory is more of a long-term kind of arrangement where people have multiple kind of intimate partner relationships. So then in that instance, the emphasis is not exactly just on sex. It's actually on kind of having sexual relationships, but also having that kind of intimate partnership with other people.
Right. So you could be married to someone and then have both partners could have ongoing boyfriend girlfriends on in addition to the marriage.
Right.
See, I always thought polyamory was like when you fall in love in the Polynesian islands. And I always thought that open relationships is when you have an open hand while masturbating. So I guess I had those wrong.
Well,
how do you do that with an open hand?
Well, it's an agreement between you and your hand, and you have boundaries and rules just like anything else.
You just kind of slap it.
Are those agreements written down, or do
you write
just,
it down on the palm
do you
of your
talk
hand.
To your hand when you're doing that?
Talk to the hand, Bruno.
Yeah, it's like, hello, what do you want to do today?
You put lipstick on your hand.
Oh,
you look so pretty. No, don't make me do this again.
But seriously, I'm sure you have some questions.
No,
about
I, of course. A lot of what comes up when you search for any of these terms, polyamory, open, I feel is like you're already at 100 miles an hour. Like, here's Hedonism 5000 in Jamaica. Like, and everyone's
oh,
like,
yeah.
And, you know, and it's like crazy. It's like nudist communities. And like, and I'm like, whoa, okay, not quite ready for that. But I was just curious, right?
Yeah, where is step one through step 100 right, of this? It's right. Like it starts right out like you're living the lifestyle and that's right. What you're doing.
And so what I wanted, like I've always wondered, how did these people even get started, right? And that's why I actually appreciated your angle with the book and what you're mentioning, which is like that question of like, sure. I know you're like jumping around on your head in some jungle location with every like 1,000 people all naked. But how did you start? Where did you get started?
Well, you got in your car and then you drove to the jungle. No, I think a lot of people identified as non-monogamous from such an early time that it was. And honestly, I don't know where people got information before the internet on this, right. But there are definitely people who just grew up not feeling like they could handle monogamy. And I think that became some kind of discussion that they had with partners. And then especially in Seattle, there is just a huge amount of polyamorous people and people in open relationships. And so in a way here, I mean, it's just more common for people to come across it. And so I think that has opened the dialogue a bit more. So that is how some of those people have wound up in that kind of more advanced position.
Why are people in Seattle more open to it?
Ooh, good
more
question.
Desiring of it.
There's a number of reasons I think that we could look at. Number one is, as you know, the Center for Sex Positive Culture is in Seattle.
So in another city, they don't have that, so they don't get. They might be open to it, but they don't know where to go.
My other theory is that there is something about really smart people that is, there's some link between polyamory and people that are very smart. So if you look at Seattle, there's a lot of technology that is biotech, a lot of kind of more mainstream technology that is attracting like really smart people to the area. And I believe there is a connection there. And I haven't quite put my finger on why there are more polyamorous people in areas where there are smarter people.
I'm super polyamorous.
Because you're super smart.
Super big brain.
Mandy is recently single, and I'm under the understanding that she's really interested in swinging.
Oh,
so
I think she meant taking dance lessons.
Oh,
you might have misunderstood.
I'm nodding my head really. I mean, shaking.
You're
shaking.
Nodding. No, you said you're nodding.
Shit.
See, that's a Freudian nod.
Yeah.
Shaking. I was saying no.
No.
Well, what can like imagine like getting rid of all the social norms and all the judgments and all the haters that hate, you know, people
hate
who
hate on the swingers.
Yeah.
Okay.
Would it interest you if that were the case?
No.
Yeah.
No, I'm too scared of getting
diseases.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If there were no STIs and no sperm making babies. asked them to make babies. There were no consequences. There were no consequences for sex. Then maybe, maybe I would be likely to be like, I don't even know your name. Let's do it right now. There are people who do do that in a world where there was no diseases and no sperms.
Well, so if you could,
you sound like, that sounds like a movie trailer.
In a world. Oh, have you seen that movie? It's a good movie.
Is it out already?
Yeah, it's really good.
It's a female, a gal that's trying to do the world thing.
Yeah, it's really good. Anyway. So how do they address STIs and sperms?
Well, sperms is invisibles, but they make babies. Right?
Well, so there's a ton of discussion about safer sex practices. A lot of people talk about, okay, if you're going to, you know, with your main partner, maybe you could be fluid bonded, which means everyone, like if two people have been tested for STIs and everyone's, you know, has come up clean and they say, okay, we're not going to use condoms, that's called fluid bonding. So on occasion, what'll happen is like the main two people will become fluid bonded and they'll say, okay, if you want to have sex with other people, you can only, you know, have sex with a condom, or only these sex acts, or these specific sex acts are the only ones that only we are going to engage in. Right. And so there you go.
Right. Yeah. I work with some polyamorous people and they have to graph out their relationships. They call it a polycule.
Polycule, yeah.
Because it's this, you know, with all these circles with lines and all these overlapping things. And if one person has an STI, then you have to account for that, right? You know, so you either, so no one, and they have to come out and say, and they have to tell everyone in the polyamorous community, I have.
Are you talking about HPV?
Yeah.
Yes.
I have HPV. So, and you have to shout that out. And then when you interact with that person, there has to be precautions so that the HPV doesn't spread through the polycule.
Correct.
Or you join a polycule that has everyone has HPV or something like that, you know what I mean? So, or herpes, right?
Ugh.
So, well, there's a lot of people.
That's true.
Herpes and HPV are, you know, pretty, I don't know, do you know the stats? It's something like 50% or something?
It's very ironic that you asked me this because my partner is an infectious disease physician, so I actually know a lot of information about this.
So herpes is HPV?
No. HPV is actually a separate virus, and it causes genital warts. It can also, a lot of it is asymptomatic.
Human papillomavirus.
Yes, and it can cause cervical cancer in women. And herpes has basically two separate strands. There's HSV-1 and HSV-2, and that I think is about 1 in 5 people have that.
I always get these confused.
So HPV, I think for everyone who is sexually active under the age of 40, it's pretty much a given that they've all been exposed to at least one strand of HPV. Herpes is not as common.
Oh, okay.
I went to a conference once to talk about the shame of having either HSV or HPV. It was a convention of people who are HSV or HPV positive.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Is that the herpes simplex? Is that the HSV?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they called it Synplex, I think it was called.
Oh,
anyway,
interesting.
And it almost turned into a group therapy session where people talked about their feelings about it. And it's just horrible, the amount of shame that people feel.
Yes.
And that shame leads not only to low self-esteem and like not very happy romantic life, but also it leads people to not disclose it when they interact with someone because they're afraid.
Yeah, it's very stigmatized.
Right, and that leads to more of it being spread
public
around.
Public health problem, yeah.
Right. So if we reduce the stigma and the shame around it, since it's so common, then we might be able to keep it at bay, one, and two, people's self-esteems can be, you know, salvaged. Okay, so this is just Kirk. I'm going to chime in here. And the reason is because I lost the rest of the audio of this episode. Major bummer. Cue wah-wah-wah music. I don't know if you care to know this, but I record all the episodes myself. I do all the audio myself. And I've produced, I don't know, over 150 episodes over the past 4 or 5 years. And every time I make an episode, I always wonder, is this the episode where I lose the audio? It turns out this was the episode that I lost. Not all the audio, but most of it. You just heard, I don't know, about 15 minutes of the beginning of the episode. we recorded, I don't know, for a couple more hours, I think, actually. It was a very long episode, but I lost all of that. And I want to apologize to Kate Stewart because I wasted her time. I feel really awful about it. In fact, at the end of recording with Kate Stewart that evening, there was a hint that I might have lost the audio. And it put me in such a bad mood that I think I wasn't very nice to her as she left. So if she's listening, I apologize for that. So just some things that I remember that we talked about. I remember Berto actually talking about how much he loved the book. He read Kate Stewart's book titled The Open Relationship Handbook. He read it and he said it was fantastic. He thought it was very easy to read. It was easy to relate to. There was a lot of good information. And I read it too. And I could say that all those observations are true. You can buy her book. The full title of the book is The Open Relationship Handbook, Basic Tips and Tools for Navigating Non-Monogamy by Kate Stewart. You can buy it on Amazon. You can buy it other places too. I remember her mentioning those other places, but doesn't everyone use Amazon these days? So go to Amazon, and it is currently a Kindle book for the price of $19.79. Again, The Open Relationship Handbook by Kate Stewart. I wanted to just sort of wrap up a little bit of what I was talking about regarding Synplex. So a colleague of mine was an organizer for this convention of people with HPV and HSV, and she knew that I was a couples therapist, a relationship therapist, and asked me to come to the convention to talk with people about intimacy and relationships in the context of having HPV or HSV. And there were a number of panel discussions and other sorts of things. And one of the events was a smaller group discussion, which ended up being like a group therapy session, like I mentioned, where everyone just volunteered their own stories. And it was very touching. And I just want to advocate for the reduction of shame regarding HSV and HPV. People have sex in our culture, and we all know that. For the most part, everyone has sex. Not everybody, but most people. And when humans come into contact with other humans, we will transmit our viruses and our bacteria to each other. It's the same as if you put your hand on an infected doorknob, or if someone sneezes in your face, or if you're just sitting next to a person that is infected with an airborne virus of some sort. It's the same when it comes to sex. But for whatever reason, when we contract a sexual transmitted disease, we have a tremendous amount of shame about it. No one hides the fact that they got the flu, or very few people would. They're not ashamed of getting the flu, right? But if someone has herpes or gonorrhea, they are not likely to advertise it. So why is that? Well, it's a social construction that diseases passed through sexual contact, particularly through the genitals, is somehow an indication that someone is dirty, that someone is shameful, that someone has no self-control, or someone is a slut, whatever that means. And these are all things that we associate as a low moral character. It's interesting now that I think about it. Imagine two people have sex and one person gives the flu to someone else. Well, you'd be okay with that. But somehow, if you have sex and you contracted chlamydia, which is an easily treated infection, somehow people just don't talk about it. And again, the reason why I would like people to change their view of these sorts of infections is because the more underground it becomes, the less likely people are to seek help, the less likely they are to disclose it to their future sexual partners, and the more likely they are to feel horrible about themselves. I think I might have mentioned this on a previous podcast, but I had a client once that was actually date raped, and she contracted HPV from this date rape. And obviously, the date rape was traumatic and horrible. But one of the most disturbing elements of this event for her was that she contracted HPV, and she felt extremely ashamed that she had contracted this. I don't know if contracted is the right word. I'm not a doctor. I don't know the language. Her self-esteem plummeted because she believed that if someone has an infection of this sort, that means that there's something wrong with them. because that's the way she viewed other people that HPV. She would judge people. If she heard someone had HPV, she'd be like, oh, what's wrong with that person? How much of a slut are they? Or what's wrong? How come they don't have any self-control? Or how come they don't have safe sex? Well, she had it, and suddenly now she thought of herself in that way. She started to shame herself about having HPV. But of course, it's not her fault. She was raped. How could she possibly be at fault for that? But also, that's a common result of a very unfortunate result of being raped is self-blame, when, of course, it couldn't be the victim's fault. So now I'm going to go to phase three of this episode. What happened was, just before Umberto and Kate Stewart arrived, Mandy and I were just talking into the microphones and talking about her dating life and whatnot. So I thought I'd just tack this on at the end of the episode. If you're not interested, don't worry about it. You don't have to listen to it. You can certainly turn it off. But a lot of people have been writing in saying they're very interested in Mandy's dating life. So I just thought I would include it here. You must have been sitting on a emblem of some sort, because it's embossed in your leg on the side.
Oh, it's my skirt, and this is my nice work bruise.
You have bruises on your knees from work.
Oh, my God. Stop recording. Shit. I went on a good date last night.
Yeah?
Uh-huh.
How'd it go?
It was good.
Yeah?
It was good.
Good, like, as in second base good, or?
Oh, there were no bases. Is that weird?
Oh.
Am I prude?
You didn't even leave home plate.
No.
Interesting.
I mean, I barely left the dugout, but I'm just starting back out there. You know, I suited up, tied my shoes, got my cleats and my glove, and, you uh-huh. know.
Got ready for the game.
Right. I showed up at the game. They might have only put me in for, like, one inning. Uh-huh. I didn't play all nine.
Oh. So it was just, like, a drink or two or something. So.
No, it was, like, a whole meal. It was a nice dinner, but they were very respectful, very gentlemanly. And
no kissy kiss at the end of the date?
No.
What do you mean, no?
I've been on first dates where we kiss. Sorry, Mom. And that's a very special, like, awesome date where you think the chemistry is so good and you're drank enough to feel relaxy enough to go for it. Go lean in and they're going to kiss you back. But
don't you feel like he should try on the first date after it's a romantic time? He should try to at least insert
some tongue in my mouth?
Yeah, some physical action to kind of move things forward.
I think it's relative on the context, in that, like, if I'm giving the signals, the body language that I, like, you know, you sit and then maybe you sit next to each other somewhere and you scoot and then your bodies actually can touch and connect, that's giving him the impression that, like, I am interested in you and I'm flirtatious with you. No, it was like a quiet bistro and I wasn't, you know, super...
Which bistro?
Uninhibited. Have you ever been to Nell's in Green Lake? It's right next to a convalescent home.
Yes.
And it's very quiet.
I got a gift certificate from there.
Did you give it to your parents?
Someone gave it to some parents.
I mean, like, did you re-gift it to your parents? Because that's who was basically eating there. Your parents.
Old people gave it to me, so.
Old people?
Yeah.
I love that place. And they all could have been at least our parents. They were all, like, retired, sitting there with their glasses of Chardonnay, just laughing about who knows. And then seriously, right next door is a convalescent home. My coworker's words, not mine. I said, you live in Green Lake? Have you been in Nell's? It's kind of a cute bistro. I run by it all the time. Never been. He's like, yeah, it's nice. Good food. Cool bar, patio outside. But, you know, it's right next to a convalescent home.
But isn't it interesting how some restaurants attract old people? Like in Lake City, there was Claire's, which is like a Denny's. Hmm. And whenever I would go there, it was just filled with old people. And
it is weird.
You just feel like, why do they come here?
Even though there's nothing really old about it, they print new menus every day with, like, local fresh food. Yeah. And it was... like, very, like, normal local Northwest inspired. I thought it was good. The food was good. The service was very attentive, obviously not very busy because of like, the 30 tables. There's, like, six of us.
Yeah.
So, but...
I got a question for you.
Yes.
So, headbands. What do you think of headbands?
Like,
they're silly when you go to a costume party and you want to look like a 70s McEnroe of some sort, right?
Oh, like a sweatband.
Yeah, sweatband.
Because girls wear headbands.
Right.
What do I think of those sweatband things when they're not running or working out, or even when they are working out?
Yeah, when they're working out.
Nobody wears those.
Right.
The ones that go, like, around your head like this.
Right.
That made are, like, the same material as the sweatbands.
Right. No one wears them.
And I never knew as a kid that you wear those because you wipe your... Oh, gotta wipe my brow off on my wrist.
Well, I used to wear a, I don't know if you noticed, but I used to wear a Yelp wristband on my guitar hand when I would play live, because I have a really obnoxious guitar playing style. And if I don't wear something on my wrist or a long sleeve shirt, I'll rub the skin off of my arm because I'm hitting my guitar so hard.
Oh, you're rocking out so hard. Always use protection when rocking out hard.
But headbands, no one wears them at the gym, right?
No, girls wear them, like the more like workout-y bands to hold your hair back, but they're not the same sweaty material.
Over the forehead, yeah.
Like McEnroe style, no. I don't think so.
No one wears them.
And I go to the gym all the time.
Right. When I go to the gym, I wear one. Why? Because I sweat like a pig only on my head. I don't sweat anywhere else. You know, I'm Japanese. I'm higher evolved, so I don't have any sweat glands in my armpits.
Hey, I'm the same.
You're Japanese, but you sweat a lot.
Hey.
But for whatever reason, when I get hot, I just drip from my head.
I do too.
And unless I wear a headband, I will be every 30 seconds rubbing it with my shirt or something, and it's annoying when you're trying to run on the treadmill.
I use a towel. My gym gives towels. And
so every 30 seconds, I'd have to Or I could wear a sweatband over my head, and I'll never have to worry about it. But I feel ridiculous, and as soon as I'm done working out, I take it off because I don't want people to laugh at me. But why is that? It's a functional thing.
Why is this stigmatized, and you want to just be free to wear your headband?
Right.
Thing.
But I can't.
Sweatband.
Because
sweatband.
People will laugh at me, or they'll think I'm like trying to be retro. Or
are you trying to be a little retro? You are a little retro.
Well, I'm not trying to be. I'm trying to be functional. In fact,
you're just trying to manage your sweat.
Right.
All that sweat.
Right. And when I go to the gym, since I try to go every day, I can't use the same sweatband every day. So I actually use bandanas. So I look like I'm a Mexican gangbanger, like some of the time.
Es muy loco. I wish Umberto was here and he'd be like, sexy voice.
But should I allow myself to be embarrassed about the headband, or should I wear it with
pride,
or should I just not wear it at all and wipe it every 30 seconds?
I don't think it's really every 30 seconds. Maybe it's every couple of minutes.
Oh, it's often, believe me.
Well, it feels as though necessity requires it, not that you can do anything else.
I could put antiperspirant on my forehead.
Do you think that would work?
Sure.
Really?
It, like, does something to the pores.
Does it? Yeah. Well, antiperspirant, like that aluminum zirconium stuff, is probably going to give you cancer. But I wear it religiously because I need that shit.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You wear not only deodorant, but antiperspirant as well?
It's like the combined whatever. Shut up, I sweat. I got it from my dad. Damn you, dad.
So you're going to get armpit cancer one day?
Yeah, but I'm as long as I'm alive, I'm going to smell okay. And then when I get cancer, I will give in to life.
Yeah.
Or give in to death and let it welcome me.
Yeah. You'll die early, but you'll smell great on the way.
You know what? I can be smelly when I'm dead.
Yeah.
How about that? Oh my gosh, sometimes it's just such a weird physiological response. I walk into a date and my temperature is all wonky and suddenly I'm sweating so bad and I have all this hair and the bangs and I feel like I'm on fire, and if it starts dripping down my face on a date, I will die. And that was like a week ago. But yesterday I was like, be cool. Put on a bunch of deodorant and just like, don't move. Just don't move and don't start sweating. And I didn't, and I was cool. And I kept cool all night over like a 3-hour dinner.
So how'd that go? Is that the same guy you went out with last night?
Last night was the not sweaty date.
So you've had two dates with two different men?
Yes.
Interesting.
I have one tonight too.
Different one tonight. On a scale from 1 to 10, what would you rate? How would you rate the previous two men?
What's 10?
The best date, dude, you've ever experienced.
Oh, Sunday, it was okay. It was like a 5.
Did you get some action that night?
No, I went for a cup of coffee.
Oh.
I had a decaf cappuccino. I'm old. Because it was like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm not going to have a real cup of coffee. That's too much caffeine.
Yeah.
It keeps me awake at night. No, there's no action. Why do you think that? Am I backwards? Am I old fashioned?
I remember you having other first dates and going quite far.
Shut up. This makes me sound horrible. I've had first dates that end in like pretty crazy ruckus makeout, but I don't think there's ever been anything more than that.
Well, in the movies, whenever they have a first date, everyone always has sex. Have you noticed that? They never just make out. It's always sex on the first date.
If I made out on a first date, I would consider that like, whoa, that date went really good and it went far enough. Because if you're like, but if you're somebody who's like, this freaking awesome, come home with me now and fuck, then go ahead. But
wait a second. So you've never been on a date with a guy and things are going well and you're
really
like, whoa.
Well.
Yeah, like really well. And you have a couple of drinks in you and you go dancing and there's some hugging.
Suddenly it's dicks in me.
And suddenly things are going in and out. And
No,
I'm not saying that. I'm saying like where you make out on a couch for like 3 hours and you're thinking, wow, the magic is here and the oxytocin is pumping and I'm feeling good. You've never had that before?
Not on the couch. I mean, I've definitely made out on a first date, but we're probably like standing next to my car or in my car, or they're like walking me to my car because I'm kind of independent and require that I drive myself to my own dates in case I don't want you to know where I live. My date last night offered to pick me up and I was like, oh my God, no.
Where'd you meet these guys anyway? Online dating.
No.
Oh.
Well, it's, some of them are online, but it's like,
oh wait.
Actually, you know what? I'm going to tout this app because I think it's
Plenty of Fish.
No.
Match.com?
No, it's not internet dating. It's not a website like that. It is a website, but it's like very, 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 very light Diet Pepsi of dating.
HapaLovers.com.
Oh, no. But that'd be awesome. Then again, when I really want to date somebody who's like us, we're crazy.
No, it's due to like Hapas.
Oh, excuse me. No, I'm not going to be objectified like
no
that.
No one's ever liked you because you're part Asian?
A lot of people don't know. A lot of people can't tell. But it's called Coffee Meets Bagel. And it's an app and I guess a website, but I've never logged onto the website. You download it and it links to your Facebook, although not at all public. It doesn't like paste, hey, I'm dating. And it's supposedly supposed to hook you up. It sends you one match a day at noon that's friends of your friends.
Oh.
That are also on this app. Although I've never had any people with mutual friends. I think they're just sending me random dudes. You make a little profile with a few photos, your basic stats, and then you can put in preferences for what you want. Your age range, religion, ethnicity, that's about it. And then they send you one. And that one gets you, and if you both pick like, you can pick like or pass. You have 24 hours from noon to the next noon, basically. And there's a countdown.
You get one a day?
One a day, and if you both hit like, it connects you on an anonymized phone number via text message.
Huh.
And then it's like, hey, your so-and-so bagel named John likes you, or like connected. Here's a question to get you started. You know, what are you doing tonight? Or
why is it called bagelandcoffee.com?
A bagel is the person that you get sent every day at noon.
Oh.
So you're like, oh, did you get a good bagel today? I don't know why. I don't know why the name. It doesn't make sense. But these have been all strangers, except last night's date I met dancing on Saturday. But I was completely sober, and I was with my best friend, and we were just dancing alone. Because we're two kick-ass bitches who just wanted to go out for a good dancey time.
Uh-huh.
And we ended up kind of dancing.
Where'd you go?
The lo-fi.
Oh, okay.
And we ended up dancing near like a circle of other kind of like cool young people.
Back room or front room?
The back. And
was it like soul night or something?
Yeah. It was amazing.
Yeah.
It's my favorite dance party. But so like everybody there is really nice, very cool, non-threatening, like fun time. And I don't know. This guy just kind of caught my eye, and I caught his, and I was like, is he looking at me? Am I looking at him? And we kind of danced near each other, but nothing like, I wasn't grinding up on his bum or anything. And then at the end, I was like, do you want to have a beer or something? He's like,
You went to him?
Well, we had been conversing little bits between yelling over songs. Like, eventually, we're dancing near each other, and I was like, what's your name? Okay. You're like, what do you do? Or you're like, where are you from? Or where do you live? Or
what
something.
What does he do?
I hope he never hears this. He'll be like uncomfortable. Not that you'd ever know. He's a dentist. He goes like this. And he points to his teeth in this loud ass dance party. And I go, you're a dentist? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, really?
Cha-ching.
No, he's just a new dentist. And he's mentioned.
Future cha-ching.
Perhaps. But I told him I don't really like money. Money makes people kind of fucked up, but nice guy. So, you know.
Free supply of nitrous.
And free dental work anytime I want.
Yeah.
If I, you know, he'll trade me root canals for blowjobs. Like,
yeah.
But I don't have dental needs because I floss 3 times a day. So
the last guy was downstairs and this one's up top.
I don't think that's ever been public knowledge. Jesus. Everybody thinks I've got fucking freak freeloader problems.
Oh, wait.
Was that the door?
I don't know.
So at the end of the night, I knew he was going to ask me out, but my friend was getting tired. I was like, are you okay? She's like, yeah, I'd like to go home. Hey. So I said, I just was like, do you want to get a beer? And he's like, yeah. But he said, I was going to ask you out, but you jumped the gun, like the next day when we were texting. What's wrong with a lady just saying, hey, you want to go out?
I know.
All right. Well, that's the end of that clip where me and Mandy were talking about various things. If you want to give some feedback about the various things that we said, please email us at contact@psychologyinseattle.com. We'd love to hear your opinions about dating and whatnot. That does it for another episode of Psychology in Seattle. Thanks for joining us, and please take care of yourself.